Good morning. Welcome. The Free Congregation of Sauk County is a Unitarian Universalist Fellowship and a welcoming congregation. This means that our invitation is to all and that all are welcome here, regardless of race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender expression, or political persuasion, or age. And I'm Robin Proud. I have the honor to be one of your associate speakers. Reading a short reading from Francis Harper. After all, whether they encourage or discourage me, I belong to this race. And when it is down, I belong to a down race. When it is up, I belong to a risen race. But when I was here last, I introduced you to Frances Ellen Watkins Harper, abolitionist, suffragist, novelist, poet, Unitarian, and a Black woman. She was active as a writer and speaker for decades, and I was able to give you only a few snippets of her work. I decided, since other Unitarians, for instance, Emerson, have had multiple programs over the years, that she had enough material for a second one. Well, last time I outlined her life, and I talked a bit about her best-known novel, Iola Leroy. I read one poem, Bury Me Not in a Land of Slaves. That's out of her five books of poetry. So today I'll very briefly recap some information about her, and then most of the words will be from Frances Harper. Frances was born as a free Black person in Baltimore in 1825 and was raised by an uncle and aunt who were educated and active in abolitionist circles. Her first job was teaching sewing at an all-Black college, but at the same time she started publishing poetry and short stories when she was only in her 20s. Soon after, she became a regular traveling speaker in the cause of abolition. At the rather late age of 35, she married and had a daughter, but her husband died 4 years later, leaving her penniless. She supported herself with her writings and her speaking. After the Civil War, she worked in the South, helping set up schools for Black children and adults, but she also had a focus on women's rights. She spoke at the National Women's Rights Convention in 1866, along with all the well-known white suffragists. She participated in every major women's organization for rights, as well as temperance groups. While she was living in Philadelphia in the 1870s, Harper joined the Unitarian Church, and she's buried on their grounds. She published additional books of poetry and novels in her older age. For instance, Iola Leroy was published when Frances was 67 years old. And here are a few quotations about her life and legacy from the introduction to A Brighter Coming Day, a Frances Ellen Watkins Harper reader. The editor, Frances Smith Foster, says of her, Frances Ellen Watkins Harper, who lived from 1825 to 1911, was a member of the African American intelligentsia and one of its most successful writers. But she did not have a room of her own when she created her most popular literature. Now, that's a reference to a famous essay by Virginia Woolf, who talked about how women, writers, artists, and musicians did not have either the physical or psychological space for their creations that men did. And if the stress of being a sensitive and ambitious woman in 19th century America was enough to send some women screaming into attics, one could certainly excuse a sensitive, ambitious Black woman if she chose to barricade herself from the outside world. And I like that because some of the people I've talked about, Julia Ward Howe, Lydia Maria Child, had a lot of frustration with the world and the things they weren't allowed to do. But Harper did not barricade herself. Having been born into an articulate and well-respected free Black family, Harper could have chosen to avoid many of the distressing realities, but she chose not to do so. She decided that her personal survival and well-being were inextricably linked with the survival and well-being of the larger society, and that confrontation, not silence, was the way. She gave up her small but real claim to a life of relative leisure and privacy and became not only the most popular African-American writer of the 19th century, but also one of the most important women in United States history. And none of us had heard of her until very recently, including me. I first found Ernestine Rose, the Jewish atheist woman, before I found our Black Unitarian foremother. Frances Harper was the best known and best loved African-American poet prior to Paul Laurence Dunbar. Her novel, Iola Leroy, established the novel as a viable genre in African-American literature. Harper's contributions to the newspapers and magazines of her day were so influential that in his History of the African-American Press, I. Garland Penn identified her as, quote, the journalistic mother, so to speak, of many brilliant young women who have entered upon her line of work so recently. Something about her speaking. Once launched into the circuit, Watkins lost no time in establishing herself as a popular and sought-after speaker. Her schedule was grueling. From September 5th until October 20th, 1854, so maybe 6 weeks, Watkins gave at least 33 lectures in 21 New England cities and villages. And of course, they were traveling by horse carriage, maybe train or streetcar. We talked last time about the many confrontations she had on trains and streetcars with figures who did not want her to be there. As a writer and lecturer, Watkins was a complex and confounding figure. Her language was called chaste, her literature moral. Contemporary reporters rarely failed to note her, quote, slender and graceful form and her, quote, soft musical voice. Watkins was, by all accounts, very ladylike in her public appearances. However, on the podium, as William Wells Brown says, quote, her arguments are forcible, her logic fervent, her imagination fervid, and her delivery original and easy. And there was nothing demure or passive about her politics and her insistence upon her rights. Today, I'll give a small selection of Harper's writings on a couple of themes that were important to her: abolition, freedom and its aftermath, and women's rights. Certainly the most urgent was abolition. And one way to support that cause was to portray to the general public the absolute horror of slavery. So here's a poem called The Slave Mother from 1854. Heard you that shriek? It rose so wildly on the air, it seemed as if a burdened heart was breaking in despair. Saw you those hands so sadly clasped the bowed and feeble head, the shuddering of that fragile form, that look of grief and dread? Saw you the sad, imploring eye? Its every glance was pain, as if a storm of agony were sweeping through the brain. She is a mother, pale with fear. Her boy clings to her side, and in her kirtle vainly tries his trembling form to hide. He is not hers, although she bore for him a mother's pains. He is not hers, although her blood is coursing through his veins. He is not hers, for cruel hands may rudely tear apart the only wreath of household love that binds her breaking heart. His love has been a joyous light that o'er her pathway smiled, a fountain gushing ever new amid life's desert wild. His lightest word has been a tone of music round her heart, their lives a streamlet blent in one. Oh, father, must they part? They tear him from her circling arms, her last and fond embrace. Oh, nevermore may her sad eyes gaze on his mournful face. No marvel, then, these bitter shrieks disturb the listening air. She is a mother, and her heart is breaking in despair. And another on this subject, the slave auction. The sale began. Young girls were there, defenseless in their wretchedness, whose stifled sobs of deep despair revealed their anguish and distress. And mothers stood with streaming eyes and saw their dearest children sold. Unheeded rose their bitter cries, while tyrants bartered them for gold. And woman, with her love and truth, for these in sable forms may dwell, gazed on the husband of her youth with anguish none may paint or tell. So women, with her love and truth, for these in sable forms may dwell. That is, people with black skin also understand love and truth. And men whose sole crime was their hue, the impress of their maker's hand. That is, they were made this way by God, in this color. And men whose sole crime was their hue, the impress of their maker's hand, and frail and shrinking children too were gathered in that mournful band. Ye who have laid your love to rest and wept above the lifeless clay, know not the anguish of that breast whose loved are rudely torn away. Ye may not know how desolate our bosoms rudely forced to part, and how a dull and heavy weight will press the life drops from the heart. So she says, even those of you who have lost someone to death do not understand the pain of this. So her poetry was popular. Her poetry was rhyming. It was something that people could hear, could memorize, which is some what people did at the time. And here are a couple excerpts from speeches on this subject. She called this the colored people in America. Having been placed by a dominant race in circumstances over which we have had no control, we have been the butt of ridicule and the mark of oppression. Identified with a people over whom weary ages of degradation have passed, whatever concerns them as a race concerns me. I have noticed among our people a disposition to censure and upbraid each other. Born to an inheritance of misery, nurtured in degradation and cradled in oppression, with the scorn of the white man upon their souls, his fetters upon their limbs, his scourge upon their flesh, what can be expected from their offspring but a mournful reaction of that cursed system which spreads its baneful influence over body and soul, which dwarfs the intellect, stunts its development, debases the spirit, and degrades the soul. Place any nation in the same condition which has been our hapless lot, fetter their limbs and degrade their souls, debase their sons and corrupt their daughters, and when the restless yearnings for liberty shall burn through heart and brain, when tortured by wrong and goaded by oppression, the hearts that would madden with misery or break in despair resolve to break their thrall and escape from bondage, then let the bay of the bloodhound and the scent of the human tiger be upon their track. Let them feel that from the ceaseless murmur of the Atlantic to the sullen roar of the Pacific, from the thunders of the rainbow-crowned Niagara to the swollen waters of the Mexican Gulf, they have no shelter for their bleeding feet or resting place for their defenseless heads. Let them, when nominally free, feel that they have only exchanged the iron yoke of oppression for the galling fetters of a vitiated public opinion. Let prejudice assign them the lowest places and the humblest positions. Let their income be so small that they must from necessity bequeath to their children an inheritance of poverty and a limited education. And tell me, reviler of our race, sinner of our people, if there is a nation in whose veins runs would not produce the same effects, whose social condition, intellectual, and moral character would present a more favorable aspect than ours. So basically, she was talking about the system of racism and oppression, which if you bring that up in this at the school board meeting, they will tell you that this is something like critical race theory and should never be mentioned, but the overwhelming systemic effect of mistreatment. And she even mentions when nominally free, not allowing people to follow certain careers, to establish any wealth, which we still hear about today. So this was very impressive at this time. Now, her language is very Victorian in a sense, rather flowery, more so than the poems, but this was well appreciated. She said, slavery is mean because it tramples on the feeble and weak. For a commissioner, upon that evidence alone, he hitches me to the, I stand at the threshold of the Supreme Court and ask for justice, simple justice. Upon my tortured heart is the mocking words, you are a Negro, you have no rights, which white men are biased defender of rights at that time either. But the day will dawn with unclouded splendor upon our downtrodden race, and that ere long we may present to the admiring gaze of those who wish us well, a people to whom knowledge has given power and righteousness exalt. All would go smoothly in the South. Here are a couple of poems from after the war. The Change. The blue sky arching overhead, the green turf neath my daily tread, all glorified by freedom's light, grow fair and lovely to my sight. The very winds that sweep along seem burdened with a lovely song, nor shrieks nor groans of grief or fear float on their wings and pain my ear, no more with dull and aching breast roused by the horn. I rise from rest content and cheerful with my lot. I greet the sun and leave my cot. For darling child and loving wife, I toil with newly wakened life. The light that lingers round her smile, the shadows from my soul beguile. The prattle of my darling boy fills my old heart with untold joy. Before his laughter, mirth, and song fade out long scores of grief and wrong. Oh, never did the world appear so lovely to my eye and ear, till freedom came with joy and peace and bade my hateful bondage cease. So it's a celebratory poem. And she has a couple of poems that are in not exactly dialect, but sort of vernacular from the point of view of Aunt Chloe. Aunt Chloe's politics. Of course, I don't know very much about these politics, but I think that some who run them do mighty ugly tricks. I seen them honeyfuggle round and talk so awful sweet that you'd think them full of kindness as an egg is full of meat. Now, I don't believe in looking honest people in the face and saying, when you're doing wrong, that I haven't sold my race. When we want to school our children, if the money isn't there, whether black or white have took it, the loss we all must share. And this buying up each other is something worse than mean. Though I think's a heap of voting, I go for voting clean. That one could apply today. And another from her point of view, learning to read. Very soon, the Yankee teachers came down and set up school. But oh, how the Rebs did hate it. It was again their rule. Our masters always tried to hide book learning from our eyes. Knowledge didn't agree with slavery. It would make us all too wise. But some of us would try to steal a little from the book and put the words together and learn by hook or crook. I remember Uncle Caldwell, who took pot liquor fat and greased the pages of his book and hid it in his hat. And had his master ever seen the leaves upon his head, he'd have thought them greasy papers and nothing to be read. And there was Mr. Turner's Ben, who heard the children spell and picked the words right up by heart and learned to read them well. Well, the Northern folks kept sending the Yankee teachers down, and they stood right up and helped us, though Rebs did sneer and frown. And I longed to read my Bible for precious words it said. But when I begun to learn it, folks just shook their heads and said, there is no use trying. Oh, Chloe, you're too late. But as I was rising 60, I had no time to wait. So I got a pair of glasses and straight to work I went and never stopped till I could read the hymns and testament. Then I got a little cabin, a place to call my own. And I felt as independent as the queen upon her throne. So now let's switch to women's issues. So even in the novels that directly address slavery and its aftermath, independent and strong women stress their rights. In Iola Leroy, the heroine rejects an easy life in the North, passing as white and taking on the domestic life of a doctor's wife. She chooses to help her people and declares that she will continue to work after marriage. This was a radical position. In her other novels, sometimes a woman refused a good offer of marriage because the man owns a saloon and drinking was the drug problem of the time. Her very first published short story, The Two Offers, presents one friend who wants to get married and another who wants to stay single and support herself as a writer. And of course, that's what Harper herself did until her late marriage and again as a widow. She advocated women being educated and also trained in various trades. Harper's poems often feature strong women from the Bible, history, or mythology. And a big part of her anti-slavery presentations concerned the particular effects on women. Now, Harper was surprisingly outspoken on what she herself called the double standard. After slavery, when Black women had more choice of partners, they could still suffer from unfair judgment by society. And here's something from a poem called The Contrast. They scorned her for her sinning, spoke harshly of her fall, nor lent the hand of mercy to break her hated thrall. The dews of meek repentance stood in her downcast eye. Would no one heed her anguish? All pass her coldly by. From the cold averted glances of each reproachful eye, she turned aside, heartbroken, and laid her down to die. And where was he who sullied her once unspotted name, who lured her from life's brightness to agony and shame? Through the halls of wealth and fashion and gaiety and pride, he was leading to the altar a fair and lovely bride. None scorned him for his singing. Few saw it through his gold. His crimes were only foibles, and these were gently told. And another one that she actually called a double standard. I had no idea that expression was even used in the 19th century. Do you blame me that I loved him? If when standing all alone, I cried for bread, a careless world pressed to my lips a stone. Do you blame me that I loved him, that my heart beat glad and free when he told me in the sweetest tones he loved but only me? Can you blame me that I did not see beneath his burning kiss the serpent's wiles, nor even hear the deadly adder hiss? Can you blame me that my heart grew cold at the tempter turned when he was feted and caressed and I was coldly spurned? Would you blame him when you draw from me your dainty robes aside, if he with gilded baits should claim your fairest as his bride? Would you blame the world if it should press on him a civic crown and see me struggling in a depth then harshly press me down? Crime has no sex, and yet today I wear the brand of shame, whilst he amid the gay and proud still bears an honored name. Can you blame me if I've learned to think your hate of vice a sham, when you so coldly crushed me down and then excused the man? Would you blame me if tomorrow the coroner should say, a wretched girl, outcast, forlorn, has thrown her life away? Yes, blame me for my downward course, but oh, remember well, within your homes, you pressed the hand that led me down to hell. I'm glad God's ways are not our ways. He does not see as man. Within his love, I know there's room for those whom others ban. I think before his great white throne, his throne of spotless light, that whited sepulchre shall wear the hue of endless night, that I who fell and he who sinned shall reap as we have sown, that each the burden of his loss must bear and bear alone. No golden weights can turn the scale of justice in his sight, and what is wrong in woman's life in man's cannot be right. This is very outspoken, and I keep thinking that in the current debates about abortion, men are never, ever mentioned. All these women conceived by immaculate conception. So we're still somewhere in this attitude. And in her famous speech, "We are all bound up together in one great bundle of humanity," Harper recounted how at her husband's death, she lost the property and goods she had paid for, being left with only one looking glass. And she was very active, of course, in women's rights. And here's a poem called "John and Jacob, a Dialogue on Women's Rights," which is between two Black men after the war. So Jacob says, "I don't believe a single bit in those newfangled ways of women running to the polls and voting nowadays. I like the good old-fashioned times when women used to spin, and when you came home from work, you knew your wife was always in. Now there's my Betsy, just as good as any wife need be, who sits and tells me day by day that women are not free. And when I smile and say to her, 'You surely make me laugh. This talk about your rights and wrongs is nothing else but chaff.'" So John replies, "Now, Jacob, I don't think like you. I think that Betsy Ann has just as good a right to vote as you or any man." Jacob says, "Now, John, do you believe for true in women running round? And when you come to look for them, they are not to be found. Pray, who would stay at home to nurse, to cook, to wash and sew when women marched into the polls? That's what I want to know." John says, "Who stays at home when Betsy Ann goes out day after day to wash and iron, cook and sew, because she gets her pay? I'm sure she wouldn't take quite so long to vote and go her way as when she leaves her little ones and works out day by day, because of course Black women have always been working mothers and working women." So Jacob thinks about that. "Well, I declare that is the truth. To vote, it don't take long. But then I kind of think somehow that women's voting's wrong. John says, the masters thought before the war that slavery was right, but we who felt the heavy yoke didn't see it in that light. Some thought they would never do for us in southern lands to change the fetters on our wrists for the ballot in our hands. Now, if you don't believe 'twas right to crowd us from the track, how can you push your wife aside and try to hold her back? Jacob says, but John, I think for women's feet, the poll's a dreadful place. To vote with rough and brutal men seems like a deep disgrace. John says, but Jacob, if the polls are vile, where women shouldn't be seen, why not invite them in to help us men to make them clean? Jacob says, well, wrong is wrong, as right is right. For woman as for man, I almost think that I will go and vote with Betsy Ann. John says, I hope you will, and show the world you can be brave and strong, a noble man who scorns to do the feeblest woman wrong. Now, Harper did take other themes, especially for her poetry, such as religion, family, motherhood, but I think that will wait for another day. I hope this presentation has given you a little more of a flavor of Harper's writings, and it's ironic that she was so well known in her day and now so forgotten. So to remedy this a bit, I do have a book for your library. When I was ordering books on Harper, there was some confusion on my part, and I ended up with an extra copy of this book, which has a biography of Frances Harper at the beginning and then some writings on her novels and poetry. So I would be happy for you to have this. And I just wanted to say that I recently was looking at something about gratitude. A lot of people keep a gratitude journal at the end of the day. They write three things that they were grateful for that day. But this thing was a little different. It asked what you had done today that would help someone. And I thought, I'm not doing very much to help people, especially now that I'm kind of limited in what I can do. And I thought, well, presenting this and bringing out Frances Ellen Watkins Harper to our Unitarian community as a very small, token toward anti-racism in our own community. So I'm honored to be able to present that to you. So if we have some questions or comments. Her one famous novel, it's named after the heroine, Iola, I-O-A-L, and her last name is Leroy, L-E-R-O-Y. That was the story of a young woman who grows up white, she and her brother, and then they find out that their mother was part black, and when the plantation is inherited by sort of an evil uncle, they are forced, she, her mother, and brother are forced back into slavery. And then after the war, she becomes a nurse and dedicates herself to her people and runs into some issues in the North where she is able to join groups and work until they find out her roots. And then suddenly she isn't. So that's her most readable novel. It's still very Victorian. Also has a lot about the reunification of slave families. So it was interesting that presence of family, the importance of family was huge, even though society did everything to destroy it, and how difficult it was after the war for these families to find each other when they were separated. They had infants and toddlers. How would they even recognize each other? But how important that was to reestablish the family. So that those are things are, Iola Leroy is generally available. It's on Project Gutenberg, but in a library. Her other books, I did read her other short novels. They're very preachy, especially the one against alcohol. Pretty much every chapter is about someone who was successful and healthy and how he went downhill immediately and how he mistreated his family. And although these things actually did happen, it gets a bit long-winded. Many of these things, unfortunately. And then just the impact that she talked about, the impact on the psyche and the intellect of years, decades, and now centuries of oppression, that they're actually finding that stress affects both children's learning and adults. It was kind of rare because there are people like Sojourner Truth or Harriet Tubman who had escaped from slavery or had been, and she was different in that she was coming from a free background. So yeah, her parents died when she was four and she went to live with this aunt and uncle. they were educated, and they had all these famous abolitionists come to that home. They had a library. Frances, she was encouraged to read. There wasn't, of course, a lot of formal education for girls, but she actually had to go to work as a servant as a teenager because they didn't have money. And that family also encouraged her to read from their library. She was very self-taught, but I think having all these speakers come to their home and speak with her aunt and uncle, one writer thought maybe the reason we don't know about her original parents, possibly her mother was Black and her father was white, but we just don't know. So that would be an interesting thing to pursue. Right. It would be very unusual. And she was well received, she was well received by some folks. There certainly were some. We had a quote about that last time where there were some hecklers. There were issues in some places and questions about whether she really was, what did they say? She's not really colored, she's painted. And she's not really a woman, she must be a man, although they all wrote about how ladylike she was. That is, of course, I've noticed that with so many of the women I've talked about, that a lot of them had to take care of children and cook over wood stoves and do the laundry while they're, then they'd go and, you know, write some political thing and read. It's amazing. Yeah, and Frances Harper would have been happy to see that we have Barack Obama, that we have Kamala Harris. That was certainly something that was unforeseen then. And yes, so this one, if you are interested in more of her excerpts from her writing, this one is also very good, where it does have an introduction, but then excerpts from speeches, letters, and poetry. Her views on religion. So she definitely considered herself a Christian, which at that time the Unitarians did as well. But she, yes, and that was another topic that maybe will be for the next time, that she stressed the mercy side of Jesus, the golden rule side, and she was quite incensed at people who declared themselves Christians and kept someone else imprisoned, tortured them, used them to make money, that this was not Christian behavior. So yes, it was. She did talk about that. Had several poems on the theme of Moses. The whole idea of leaving slavery, the Exodus, comes up in a lot of spirituals, and that was something she referred to as well. But yes, for Jesus, she emphasized love, compassion, and equality, in a sense, which Jesus talked about. And we don't know. She was very active in the African Methodist Episcopal Church, but she joined with the Unitarians, it seems, largely because of their great social action and ability to move the community. And I don't know whether she continued to attend both churches, but she did attend the Unitarian Church regularly when she was in Philadelphia. And I assume most of that congregation was white, but that was the way. When she went to these women's conferences, she would be the only Black woman there, usually, or certainly the only Black woman on the podium. And so that actually was here, but I had some things on that and decided to postpone that. So you may hear from her again. Thank you, everyone. And our closing words, those of us who choose to carry it on. At the time that she wrote it, it said, respectfully dedicated to the Association for Colored Youth, Atlantic City, 1902. So this was nearer the end of her life. She died in 1911, before women got the vote. Words for the hour. Others shall sing the song. Others shall right the wrong. Finish what I begin. All that I fail of, win. What matters it, I or they? Mine or another's day, so the right word be said and life be sweeter made. Ring bells, unreared steeples, the joy of unborn peoples, to trumpets far off blown, your triumphs are my own.